United States versus Garcia and Jimenez-Fentecourt.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Mark Michalik, representing Lezuin Garcia. May it please the Court. Your Honors, the government agrees that the 10-month sentence that the district court imposed on Mr. Garcia is procedurally unreasonable. The government agrees that the district court should have credited Mr. Garcia 8 months and 29 days under Guideline 5G1.3, subsection B. The government further agrees that the sentence that the district court imposed was an upward variance. Depending on how you look at it, it was either, in absolute terms, about twice the top of the guideline range because he had already served about 9 months and had an additional 10 months imposed on him, or it's about 10 times what the district court would have imposed at the top of the guideline range because in order to have an aggregate sentence of 10 months, it needed only to impose 1 month and 1 day. However, the government argues that the procedural error was harmless. We agree with the government that this court has to decide if the district court's procedural error was harmless on the basis of whether or not the procedural error affected his substantial rights. And I think we agree that his substantial right in question is his liberty interest. The government says, based on a paragraph in the PSR, that Mr. Garcia's earliest release date was May 24th of 2011. However, the rest of the paragraph in the PSR indicates that Mr. Garcia could be released from his Kentucky sentence earlier if he were to be paroled. Kentucky is an indeterminate sentencing state, and Mr. Garcia only needed to have served 20% of his 36-month Kentucky sentence in order to be eligible for parole, which would have been 7.2 months. Which means that as he was being sentenced in the district court, he was eligible for parole.
When is his next hearing?
I don't know. In fact, it's not in the record, but I think that he may have been paroled already because the Bureau of Prisons website shows that he's in transit, whereas most of my clients that are serving state sentences do not show up at all on the Bureau of Prisons website. I tried to contact the parole folks in Kentucky, and I did not get an answer from them.
So you think he's in transit right now between Kentucky and the Bureau of Prisons?
Yes, that's what Bureau of Prisons' website indicates, Your Honor.
Do you think, by your calculation, he would be eligible to get out now or soon?
I think that he was eligible to be considered for parole in Kentucky before he was even sentenced in the federal court. But based on the statutes and the regulations in Kentucky, in order to be paroled, he would have had to appear at a parole hearing in Kentucky. And he couldn't do that.
At this stage, how much, under this case, should he have already been given credit for serving?
I'm sorry, as of today, Your Honor, or as of... At the time of sentencing, he'd already served almost 9 months on the Kentucky sentence. The top of the guideline range was 10 months.
Okay.
So he's already into extra time if the district court intended to give him a guideline sentence.
And the so-called extra time is time where he may be eligible for parole.
Where he was eligible for parole in Kentucky, according to the statute and regulation. Yes, Your Honor. It appears that in Kentucky, any nonviolent crime, the offender is eligible for parole after serving 20% of the sentence, which in this case would have been 7.2 months, making him eligible before the district court even imposed sentence. The government's right. I did not give much information to the district court about his parole eligibility in Kentucky because I thought that was covered by the PSR saying that he was, his sentence could be different depending on whether or not he was reviewed by the parole board and his good behavior. The government points to the Abbas and the Anderson cases, wherein this court found harmless error when the district court in those cases, in both cases, did calculate the guidelines incorrectly. But it stated, it first of all recognized, the district court in each case recognized that there was a dispute about the guidelines and that it was making a decision. And then the district court in each case said that regardless of how the guidelines played out, it would impose the same sentence under the 3553A factors. The court did not do that with Mr. Garcia. The court indicated that the guideline range was 4 to 10 months during sentencing, and in its statement of reasons indicated that it thought that it imposed a within-guideline sentence. I see that I'm in my rebuttal time. If there's no more questions.
Garcia received, what, a total of 10 months sentence?
Yes, it is. It's admittedly not a particularly long sentence, but it is much longer than what the guidelines called for. And it's my view is that while the guidelines no longer guarantee uniformity in actual sentence, they still serve to guarantee procedural uniformity so that that there is integrity and good decision making in the district court for sentencing. And that's why I think that this case is important, even though there is admittedly not a particularly long period of time at stake. I'm sure it seems long to Mr. Garcia, though.
Thank you. Mr. Dallier?
May it please the court, my name is Anthony Dallier, and I'm here representing Mr. Jimenez-Betancourt. This court in the past has said that if anyone acquainted with the facts of the case would have known without being told why the judge had not accepted the argument, then the judge need not specifically comment on the argument. That was Cunningham 429 F3rd at 679. In this case, anyone that was watching it would have walked away shaking their head wondering what happened. And this isn't some crazy idea that I came up with. This was the single sovereignty sentence that had been outlined in the commentary of the pre-1995 version, Note 3 of 5G1.3. And it seemed like the ultimate in fairness and certainly was worth at least addressing. To the extent practicable, the court should consider a reasonable incremental penalty to be a sentence for the instant offense that results in a combined sentence of imprisonment that approximates the total punishment that would have been imposed under the guidelines. The district court had the discretion in this case, and we asked her to use it. We specifically laid out how much time he had, the fact that he'd already missed his first parole hearing because he was being brought up to Wisconsin for our case. We talked about the offense conduct. It was essentially carrying on the same exact thing that they had done here. And what we asked the court to do in the end was, because I knew it was going to be an uphill battle, but what I asked them to do in the end was tell us what would be wrong with this sentence. Is there not enough retribution? Is there not enough general or specific deterrence? Not enough incapacitation? Not enough rehabilitation? And we really didn't get any of that. There's nobody in that courtroom that was familiar with the case that was there that would be able to figure out why he had a sentence that ended up being 150% of the top of the guidelines for him. That's actually all I have for you. Thank you.
Ms. Rumbelow.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Rita Rumbelow for the United States. I did represent the United States below. If the court allows me to, I first want to address Mr. Betancourt's argument. Unlike Mr. Garcia, Mr. Betancourt was subject to the guideline provision under 5G1.3C. He was not entitled to sentence credit because the Kentucky offense conduct did not change his advisory guidelines range. Therefore, the district court judge had the discretion to sentence him concurrently, partially concurrently, or consecutively. And Judge Crabb chose to sentence him concurrently, and she noted on page 7 of the sentencing transcript, look, I understand you're making this sentencing credit argument, but I don't buy it. You know, the Kentucky scheme was only part of what he had been involved in. So she did not commit any procedural error at his sentencing because she specifically addressed the arguments that he was making for sentencing credit, and she stated the reasons why she did not want to go along with his argument and why she chose to sentence him to the high end of the advisory guideline range. And again, the sentence was completely concurrent to his undischarged 3-year term of Kentucky state imprisonment. Mr. Betancourt, as the court will recall from the statement of facts, was the one defendant who was charged in all 14 counts in this indictment. He had been involved in the scheme in Wisconsin from the beginning, all the way back to December of 2008, unlike Mr. Garcia, who was only named in the last few counts of the indictment. So Mr. Betancourt was clearly more culpable than Mr. Garcia. He, again, was not eligible for sentence credit under 5G1.3b, and Judge Crabb completely recognized that and did not commit any procedural error. So as to Mr. Betancourt, I ask that this court affirm the judgment and conviction of the district court. For Mr. Garcia, the government has conceded that the district court did commit procedural error. And in our brief, we did argue harmless error, but in light of the new information presented by defense counsel this morning at argument, if it is true that Mr. Garcia has already been paroled by the state of Kentucky and is now in the Bureau of Prisons custody, then I can't stand here with a straight face and say that it was harmless error. I think then that this case should be remanded, and the district court could have the opportunity then to figure out what his custodial status is. It would allow defense counsel to present that evidence as well as the government to the district court. And then if the court so chooses, she may again reimpose that 10-month sentence but state her reasons for doing so. So in light of the information presented this morning, we would agree that it's not harmless error and that Mr. Garcia's case should be remanded to the district court.
I appreciate your recognition of that.
Thank you.
Do I?
I'm not sure if I actually understood what the government meant to say, because 5G1.3 clearly gave the judge the ability to give him credit for the entire time that he had served, from the time he was sentenced on. It could be concurrent, or she could have made it consecutive had she wanted to. I don't think that there's any doubt that she had the discretion to do that. The problem
didn't
that
she exercise it, saying that he was in the he's responsible for the whole thing. It's much bigger than Kentucky, and therefore...
No, actually, it didn't really sound like that at all. You'll have the transcript, and really what it came across kind of oddly as is everything that happened in Kentucky was included in the guidelines, and it still ended up being 150% of what he would have got had it been concurrent. And the really, I don't know, the odd thing about how all of that worked was that the judge just didn't really address it. She said that, she did say that, you know, I understand that you want that, but I'm not going to give it to you. But that
Didn't Judge Crabb go on about the Kentucky activity was just part of the conduct?
Right, but it was actually included. And in fact, had he stolen more money in Kentucky so that it would have raised his guidelines, he would have benefited with a lower sentence.
Yeah. Are we dealing with a 14-month concurrent sentence here?
It was...
For theft of over $60,000?
It was actually 9 months had already been in,
right,
and then 14 months that was concurrent with whatever was left of the sentence.
So, left, yes.
Right.
And we're dealing with a theft here of over $60,000.
Correct.
And the issue before us is the reasonableness of the sentence?
No. The issue before us is that... Well, actually, it is. If the guidelines represent a reasonable sentence,
right,
then you know, Mr. Betancourt should receive an explanation of why the sentence he received was 150% of what the guidelines would have normally given. In the end, if you see that the guidelines are reasonable, then it's difficult to understand how it would turn out that way.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks to all counsel, to appointed counsel. You're both appointed.